From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. One of the key drivers of global warming is carbon emissions. Keeping carbon out of the atmosphere is crucial to avoiding a runaway increase in global temperatures, leading to more extreme weather, flooding, and freak storms becoming the norm. One of the ideas for curbing carbon emissions would have us storing it underground. There are a number of projects to do just that here in Illinois, including the proposed Heartland Greenway. A 1,300-mile pipeline of steel would connect industrial facilities in South Dakota, also Minnesota, Nebraska, and Iowa, sending carbon to Illinois, where it would be stored deep underground. But not everyone is enthusiastic about the project, especially some of the landowners in Iowa whose land would be used for the pipeline. Joining us to talk about her coverage of this project, who's fighting for and against it, is Katie Pikus, agriculture reporter at Iowa Public Radio and Harvest Public Media. Katie, good to have you back. Thanks for being on with us again.
Thanks, Brian.
Also joining us is Sally Greenberg. She's principal scientist on energy and minerals at the Illinois State Geological Survey. Sally, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Brian. Happy to be here today.
Listeners, if you have a question about carbon sequestration, for example, what is carbon sequestration? We'll be asking that. But if you have another question about this project or about global warming as it relates to carbon emissions and sequestration and trying to put carbon underground, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number to call. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So, Sally Greenberg, I want to begin with you and with the basic question I just alluded to there. Can you explain to me, like, as I sometimes say, like I'm a smart 13-year-old, what is carbon capture?
Absolutely. Carbon capture utilization and storage is really a process that combines several different existing technologies to capture carbon dioxide from an emission source, like an ethanol plant or a power plant or a cement factory, transporting that carbon dioxide to a storage or a use location. And if you're storing carbon dioxide in the subsurface, like we're talking about here today, you're actually in drilling a well, injecting carbon dioxide at a depth of a mile or more beneath the surface, and you're storing that carbon dioxide in pore space in existing rock, such as a sandstone rock formation, which we have in abundance here in Illinois.
When you say pore space, so this is the carbon filters in sort of like filters into sand. This is not going to be giant underground caverns of carbon dioxide.
Correct. So the way I like to think about it on a macro scale is a sandstone is literally that. It is a rock formation that is made of rounded grains of sand that are cemented together, sort of like oranges in a crate of oranges, where they touch each other on multiple locations, but there's open space in between them. And in that pore space in the subsurface, where we're talking about doing storage, those pore spaces are filled with very, very heavy brine, about six times saltier than the ocean. So you can't really use that water, but it does exist. So the carbon dioxide dissolves into the water and is permanently stored in the physical pore spaces of that rock.
All right, Katie Pikus, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You've been covering this proposed carbon pipeline for quite some time now. Can you just tell us what is it? What is it? Who is it intending to connect? And what's behind it?
Sure. So here in Iowa and the Midwest, there are three carbon pipeline proposals, and these would basically connect ethanol plants across the Midwest into this pipeline network, where they would then send their carbon dioxide to these storage sites. And as far as who's for it, you know, the ethanol plants that are involved are very excited about this as a kind of seen as a climate solution for their industry. And then there's also a lot of opposition to these pipelines from farmers, from environmentalists, from landowners, and a lot of the opposition is focused on how safe are these pipelines.
What are some of those concerns about safety that people have expressed to you in your reporting?
Sure. So one of the biggest concerns that I've heard was that there was this pipeline in Mississippi that ruptured in 2020 and carbon dioxide leaked out. And so did this poisonous gas called hydrogen sulfide. And because of that, dozens of people got really sick. So here in Iowa, environmentalists and others are pointing to that Mississippi pipeline. They're really concerned about the health impacts of a rupture, or how would first responders get to the scene on time if something like this happened? And at a recent Iowa Utilities Board informational public meeting that I listened in on last week, this big concern was brought up, and a representative for the company that was presenting this, they're called Navigator CO2 in Texas, a representative from that company said that particular pipeline incident in Mississippi has been heavily studied by the industry since it happened to make sure that nothing like it happens when they build these sort of pipelines here.
I think the chemical you mentioned is hydrogen sulfide. You know, is that always a part of these projects? Is that, or was that some sort of side effect, or what was the deal with that?
So yeah, this was a not carbon dioxide. This was hydrogen sulfide that, you know, had this kind of noxious smell, very, well, noxious gas, very sort of hard-boiled egg type, rotten egg smell.
Okay.
And these companies, when they've presented to, you know, the different residents in Iowa, they've said that what they're sending through their pipelines is just pure carbon dioxide and not hydrogen sulfide. So it's unclear to me of whether the hydrogen sulfide in that particular incident in Mississippi was, you know, part of the pipeline stream or came from somewhere else.
Okay. Sally, I wonder if you have a perspective on that and the safety of a pipeline like this and carbon capture in general.
Yeah. So thank you. Being, you know, very cognizant of what the concerns are that Katie is bringing up. So when you're looking at carbon capture and storage, we're very heavily regulated by the underground injection control program. So anytime you store something in the subsurface, you have to have Environmental Protection Agency approval and a permit to do so. In the process of storing carbon dioxide in this manner, you literally are regulated to ensure that there is no additional substance in the CO2 stream. So in other words, you're regulated to inject pure carbon dioxide. And the ethanol production process in and of itself does not produce hydrogen sulfide. So you most likely have a situation where you're really dealing with a pure CO2 stream for storage. And that is regulated again in many different ways. There are pipeline regulations. Obviously, things do happen. First responders, when dealing with a carbon dioxide leak, would be faced with a situation where carbon dioxide, when it is released, creates a very cold environment. And so your greatest safety hazard really is related to the actual handling of the material in the process of mitigating some sort of pipeline leak.
And without getting too much.
Which is unlikely. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. And without getting too much into the physics, I gather that's because of the compression. This is not. Oh. I mean, there's some work that has to happen at these plants. I mean, I think that, you know, I was trying to think through visual metaphors for this, and I'm thinking of, like, you know, the little downspout extender I have on my gutter to direct the water away from the foundation of the house, or, you know, trying to stick a tube on the back of your a car exhaust or something. But there is a process that compresses the carbon dioxide, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So one of the great things about carbon dioxide is that it is a compressible gas. So we can take large volumes of carbon dioxide at the subsurface, or I'm sorry, at the surface. We make sure that there is no water in that carbon dioxide stream, and then we can compress it to a liquid-like state, which is how it's injected into your storage reservoir at depth.
So it starts as a gas, it's compressed down to a liquid, and that's how it's stored underground. Katie, what about the, and maybe I should just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st, I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a proposed pipeline that would connect ethanol industrial plants in some nearby states, South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, go into a pipeline, send it to central Illinois, where it would be stored more than a mile underground. Here we're speaking with Katie Pikus, who's a reporter with Iowa Public Radio and Harvest Public Media, who's been working on stories about the pipeline, and also Sally Greenberg, who's principal scientist on energy and minerals at the Illinois State Geological Survey. And Katie, what about the, how are the farmers, I presume mostly farmers, but other landowners, how is it working? I mean, is there eminent domain involved here? Are they being compensated for the use of their land? What about that aspect of what's happening?
So, for example, Navigator CO2 Ventures in Texas has said at public meetings with residents that they would buy these 50-foot permanent easements from the landowners, and that the landowners would be compensated based on certain market studies, and landowners would be able to negotiate their compensation as well.
Individually, so it would be sort of one-on-one, piece, parcel by parcel as they go across?
From what I understand, it's like they would be signing contracts and could negotiate individually.
I see. Interesting. Do the landowners ultimately have a choice, or will they be pretty much forced to go along with this if there's regulatory approval?
I think that's one of the concerns of a lot of landowners, that once there's regulatory approval, that the deal would be done.
Okay. Sally Greenberg, let me ask you, is there, maybe we can just take a step back and look a little bigger picture here. Can you talk about why it is important from a climate perspective for humankind to figure out how to capture carbon?
Sure. So, by all of our models, looking at the energy transition and our energy future, in order to have as much of an immediate impact as we can on mitigating global climate change, we need to reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And volumetrically, carbon capture, utilization, and storage provides us with the largest impact of being able to do that in a relatively quick time frame, while we can be working on other energy technologies that ultimately lead us to that transition. And you know, your listeners might be asking themselves, why would this pipeline be terminating in Illinois? And I just want to point out that we have really exceptional and unique geology that make the state of Illinois and our subsurface a very viable target for carbon storage or carbon sequestration. And as the world is seeking to manage its carbon, people are going to be interested in using Illinois' pore space, as I described, for that storage. And along the lines of what Katie was saying, you know, the expectation is that landowners are compensated for the use of their pore space, and it really becomes a natural resource for the state of Illinois.
Well, now you've piqued my curiosity. What is it about Illinois' substrate? Oh, you mentioned the sandstone, but why? Why does Illinois have this unique geography? Or geology, excuse me. Geoscience.
hundreds of millions of years ago, when Illinois was at the equator, we were large sandstone deposits. And when I say large, I mean, you know, on the order of 15 to 2,000 feet thick, sedimentary layers laid down in the Illinois basin. And I guess I should back up. Illinois, the subsurface, is sort of like a big casserole dish where you have very hard igneous rock that forms the base, and then you have sedimentary layers that fill in that basin. So at the very bottom, we have a unique sandstone called the Mount Simon Sandstone, which has a lot of good injectivity. It has high porosity and permeability and ability to store billions of tons of carbon dioxide should we choose to deploy that. It also has in place a different type of sedimentary rock, shale, which acts as upward migration barriers so that the carbon dioxide stays in the formation where you put it so that it's permanently stored. Because once you've stored it, you want to ensure through monitoring and a variety of other technologies and techniques that the carbon dioxide is staying where you put it, because that's the primary objective, safe and viable permanent storage of carbon dioxide.
Interesting. All right. Well, that does sort of get at another question I have, but we need to take a break. We're going to conclude this conversation after the break, but do stay with us. We're speaking with Sally Greenberg, who's with the Illinois State Geological Survey, principal scientist on energy and minerals there, and also Katie Pikus, who's agriculture reporter for Harvest Public Media and Iowa Public Radio. We're talking about a proposed pipeline that would connect biofuel plants in South Dakota and other states underground through a pipeline that goes through Iowa and into central Illinois, where the carbon would be stored deep underground here. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. If you have a question for our guests, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a proposed pipeline that would bring carbon emissions from ethanol plants, biofuel plants in South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, send it through a pipeline under Iowa to central Illinois, where the carbon emissions would be stored deep underground. We're speaking about this with Katie Pikus, who's a reporter with Iowa Public Radio and Harvest Public Media, who's been covering people who are both for and against the pipeline, and also Sally Greenberg, who's principal scientist on energy and minerals at the Illinois State Geological Survey. And but before the break, we were talking about sort of the bigger picture. Why is carbon capture important for the global warming picture? And also, why is Illinois uniquely or at least especially geologically suited for it? Sally, I wonder, and you're involved, I should say, with other carbon capture projects in Illinois. Can you address, though, the I think there's a concern among some environmentalists that this is, you know, sort of a deck chairs on the Titanic solution, right? That really we should be stopping carbon production. I wonder, how do you respond to people who raise that concern?
You know, I think it's a very valid concern, Brian. And what I always say is that we really need a balanced portfolio when we think about energy and the energy transition, just like the best advice is to have a balanced retirement portfolio. And that is, we really need every energy technology. We need renewables. We need nuclear. We need to be coming up with solutions for reducing our emissions. We need all hands on deck, so to speak, to be able to create an energy transition. But it's a transition, and we have to go from where we are now to where we want to be, where we aspire to be in the future. And, the thing about science and demonstration and big change like this is that you have to do it. You have to play the long game, and carbon capture and utilization and storage allows us to make that energy transition while mitigating our climate impacts in the now. And that's super important. But I don't see it as a replacement or an either or. I see it as an all of the above approach to energy transition.
What I also wondered if you might say, and maybe you will now that I'm prompting it, but and maybe not, maybe I'm wrong, but I've seen out there that even if we were to go to carbon emissions zero tomorrow, it would still behoove us to sort of try and figure out a way to remove carbon from the atmosphere so that we eventually may need to find a way to store carbon even if emissions are, have been eliminated. Do you have any sense on that?
I think as humankind moves forward and we adapt to changes, geologic changes, climate changes, that we always need to be creative in the way that we're doing that. And so I think understanding that there are impacts from the various actions that we use to uphold our society is important to do so. So I can't see a situation where we would turn off the knowledge or the ability to better understand. And I just wanted to add, you know, that this issue is important to the Illinois General Assembly. They passed a law in 2021 asking the Prairie Research Institute, which is the parent organization for the Illinois State Geological Survey and the other surveys, to do a study on carbon capture and storage and the opportunities, challenges, risks, et cetera, for the state of Illinois. And we're working on that report right now. We have a very active stakeholder engagement process. So there's an opportunity for the citizens of Illinois to let us know what they think about all of this and share their concerns.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And we will certainly follow up as that report comes to fruition. We did get a voicemail from one of our listeners while we've been talking this morning who does have some concerns about carbon capture. Let's take a listen to that.
Good morning. This is Jim from Champaign. Let's be clear about this when it comes to storing carbon dioxide. There is no such thing as permanent storage without any leakage whatsoever. At some point, I would expect most of that to come back. Thank you for your consideration.
All right. Thank you for that message, Jim. Katie, does that echo some of the concerns you've heard in your reporting in Iowa?
Yeah, so for one thing, I'd spoken with someone from the Illinois State Geological Survey a while ago, and they had said that, carbon storage like this could last for eons. So it's not necessarily forever, but certainly it's seen as something, you know, beyond our lifetime. But as for, you know, permanent storage without any leakage, I'd say it just really depends on how the companies go about this and how solid the pipelines are.
And Sally, do you want to respond to what Jim was saying there, that there's no such thing as permanent storage? I know this is, you know, this has been a concern with nuclear waste, right? How do you devise a permanent storage solution? Maybe some people have that in their minds and the challenges there. Maybe you can just talk about how you can be certain or as certain as possible to that this would be a permanent solution.
Yeah, so a lot of what we do is related to due diligence. So we characterize the location where you're going to be storing carbon dioxide. We utilize a lot of monitoring technologies that allow us to understand where the carbon dioxide is and whether or not it's staying where it belongs. There's a regulatory system in place by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And we have demonstrated that the technology is safe and viable and that the carbon dioxide stays where we store it. And we have two really good examples of that in Decatur, the University of Illinois, my organization, and Archer Daniels Midland have been working together to store over 3 million tons of carbon dioxide safely with two different projects in the area since 2011. So we have a lot of knowledge about how to do it safely. And we have a lot of checks and balances in place to make sure that that's actually happening.
What would it look like if there were, I mean, is it, what could go wrong, I guess, right? I mean, would there be a big geyser of cold air, you know, coming out of the ground? I'm trying to envision how you would know. How do you keep track of that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's an interesting question, right? You're storing carbon dioxide at 6,800 feet beneath the surface or more. And we know that the Earth's natural trapping capacity is working because we don't have hydrocarbons, which are, say, at about 3,200 feet beneath the surface in Illinois, we don't see those coming to the surface. So your most likely leakage point would be the well in which you're injecting. So you monitor that very heavily. And if you have some indication, such as a change in temperature in your real-time monitoring, what you would do is you would shut down the carbon dioxide injection and you would mitigate the well. You would do whatever you needed to do to ensure that your leak was rectified before you were able to continue to inject carbon dioxide. So you would never really see like you're describing. You would mitigate that at depth in the subsurface long before you saw something at the surface.
Okay, well, I think that will do it for this conversation. I want to thank Sally Greenberg, who is a principal scientist in energy and minerals at the Illinois State Geological Survey, and Katie Pikus, who's an agriculture reporter at Iowa Public Radio and Harvest Public Media. We will continue following this story and carbon sequestration in general. Katie, Sally, thank you so much for being with us today here on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thanks.